let's start another Design Studio conversation about presentation design and the business of presentation. Here are the show hosts, Troy Caller, Nolan Hams, and Sandra Johnson. Season 6, Episode 122.
Hi, I'm Troy Caller from TLC Creative Services, Inc., based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey.
Hey guys, thanks for joining us. We've got a great conversation coming up, but I'd love to hear just what's happening in studios this week.
Well, I've realized that while some people have train sets or gardening or stamp collecting as a hobby that takes up a great amount of their time, mine apparently this past week was trying to connect a series of lights in my office to Stream Deck through Alexa. So just so I have to get up and walk the 5 feet to flip the wall switch.
Did it work?
Yes and no. Yeah, okay. A special shout out goes to Steffi Hogan, who sent me a 2.5-page instruction sheet on how to do it with Alexa and if this, then that. And seems like dozens and dozens of steps. Every day I kind of worked on it and got a little closer, and it's kind of in a place where I've left it now. Like it's kind of works sometimes, sometimes doesn't. It works all from Alexa, but not from the Stream Deck completely. Anyway, so back and forth to the UPS store, returning Amazon light bulbs and all sorts of things. It's just, it was quite a waste of time. Now we hope to get it integrated, but that's, and then there was some work in between there. But that was my focus. Sandy, what were you doing this week?
Oh, let's see. Well, I'm planning ahead. We are going to Hawaii in a couple of years. We took the big step and we booked a trip. Years. I meant weeks. Thank you. Really planning ahead.
Oh, nice. Island?
We always go to Oahu.
Okay.
We always stay on Waikiki. I know we should be more adventurous, but here's the deal. You know, it's not completely open yet. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to go there, be where we have something that's a little familiar and just hang out the whole time.
Nice.
So that's our plans. Lauren, my poor Lauren, she just called me a couple of hours ago, so upset. She was planning on coming home at the end of the month. And one or both of our governments put the kibosh on that.
Now, so remind everyone, where is she?
Oh my gosh, thank you. She's in London.
Okay.
So between the UK and the US government, she is not allowed to fly into the country. Ugh. Yeah, I know. Mm. We miss her. It's been a year. She left on March 15th of last year. So we were looking forward to her coming back. I've been really busy, you guys. I've spent the last week, I can't really talk about the details of it, but I spent the last entire week onboarding with the new client. Basically, I'm developing a strategy for presentation design and delivery within an organization. And it's really fun, but oh my gosh, it's so consuming, but I love it. And of course, we have the MVP summit coming up. All three of us will be there, and all three of us are presenting at, are speaking at Present to Succeed. Congratulations to the contest winners. And I have two speaking engagements in May, one at Optum, the nurse line health insurer financial services company, and another for the National Association for Government Communicators. Looking forward to both of those. How about you, Troy?
Okay, I have two things I'll just mention really quick. What I feel are kind of cool things to mention. First is I bought tickets to the immersive Van Gogh exhibition. It's coming to Los Angeles. Ooh. It was in France last year. I was planning to surprise Lori with an actual anniversary trip to France. Ooh. And visit it there. So COVID kind of ruined that event. It probably saved my budget, but it did ruin the event. Ooh. Well, that same exhibit. Have you guys seen this? It's the same exhibition coming to Los Angeles in May. So it's 2 months away still. I bought tickets just last week. The earliest date not sold out was in October already. So I'll put a link in it in the show notes. But if you've seen anything like 20-foot high animated art of Van Gogh, like Starry Night, in other words, it's been all over social media for a while. That's it. I'm very excited about it. I actually told my wife it's no longer a surprise. Lori knows we're going to see it. Okay, so that's item one. only if you're in Southern California, I guess. Item number two, on the PowerPoint side, we have a pretty cool scenario happening this week. Think of the movie Inception, where, you know, there's something is inside something that's inside something, but it all feels real. So here's the deal. An AV team needs the PowerPoint computers directly connected to their production setup at the meeting event. Well, not going into details onto why they need to do that, but it has to do with Zoom and watermarking and need to be able to do a recording before Zoom gets the video feed so they can have it without a watermark. We have a number of our TLC Creative Production presentation show computers at the production facility. The computers are connected to the equipment. So traditional HDMI connections. AV production team, they're totally happy. They get a direct connection. They can capture everything out. So for us, we're obviously not going there. So we've had this remote access software on all of our computers. Our IT manager put in place a long time ago. It's mainly so that IT could manage, connect to and maintain computers while they've traveled all over the world. Well, we've upgraded that RMM software so we can use the show computers from our studio. So the computers are in a ballroom. We're literally remoting into those computers. We run that computer full screen. So it looks like we're running a presentation just like it's in front of us, but really is we're running it on a computer out there. It's just using PowerPoint in this just completely Inception type world. So it's just fun and exciting and just weird world that we're living in. So there are two little tidbits of what's happening.
Well, I've got some news. If that's okay if I get started with that.
That's good news.
Okay. So I am beta testing the Windows version of You'll recall that it came out about a year ago. It's this really cool tool that allows you to put a video image of yourself in front of your content, kind of like a newscaster kind of look and feel. And if it was only for Mac. But right now, I was accepted into the beta for the Windows version. I have to say, right out of the gate, it's pretty cool using it with Zoom. It's not available to use with Teams. It's available with something else, but I can't remember right now. I can add my presentation to and it will sync with Zoom meetings to put me in front of the content. I have three options. This is what I like. I have three options for my appearance. One is my head's in a little circle, a little bubble in front of the image. The other is that newscaster approach, and I'll be darned if I can remember what the third one is. Pretty nice. That said, Microsoft announced the standout mode at Microsoft Ignite, right? And they also, I think they announced it really officially under some different name last October, but basically it's providing the same outline video option over content that is beta testing on Windows right now.
I think the inside name of that was like weather reporter, news reporter. It was weather. So I got one on Teams.
Okay.
Teams is taking over PowerPoint.
That's a discussion.
They're integrating presentation elements, but the problem is they're integrated in Teams. You can't just use them in PowerPoint. But as example, we have PowerPoint Live in there. Now we have this presenter mode in there and we have this dynamic view in there. I won't even go into details on them all, but they're things that are awesome and they're presentation, they're PowerPoint oriented, but you can only do them in Teams. You can't use them in just PowerPoint alone. So it's kind of a weird world we're living in of where there are new features for PowerPoint, but are they really for PowerPoint? They're in Teams, but they're only for Teams and present. Anyways, so there are some new things happening there. I'm sure we'll go into more details and maybe we can get some more. The reason I don't want to go into details, I'm kind of hoping that when we go to the MVP summit, some of the things that are not under NDA will give us more clarity into what they are and we'll see some demos and stuff. So anyways, what else do you guys see? Nolan, what do you see?
Okay. Well, one of the things outside of Teams, fortunately, PowerPoint has quietly added to Presenter Coach body language feedback, at least in the online version right now. And even there, of course, it's not 100% yet, but I haven't been able to play with it. But now if your camera's on, it's going to tell you, like, are you facing it? Are you facing the camera or not? And so, yeah,
they're going to have fiction tips like that shirt. No,
exactly. Zip up your collar's crooked.
I do like the fashion tips, though. I like that. And hey, we've got some more company in the presentation podcasting world. Presentation Junkies is a new podcast hosted by Joel Simmons and Lisa Marie Grillos.
Love the name. Love the name.
Yeah, it's a good name. I know Joel from the Creative Pro events. I don't know Lisa Marie, but they are they both work in the on-site show mm-hmm. world. So Troy, have you run into them?
You know, that's really funny, is I've listened to a couple of their episodes now. They mm-hmm. don't have a whole lot out there. And the first one they're talking about, you know, they're talking about like Salesforce, Dreamforce, the event. I'm like, I'm there, but that is such a massive event when they were doing it. I was like, you know, I would run into people all the time. There was probably the biggest gathering of presentation show site ops around. I mean, 50, 60 of us running around right. the city. So I can't say that I know them in person. I've seen their pictures, and I may actually know Lisa Marie, but I'm pretty certain. Yeah, it's a fun one because they're talking my world. I've enjoyed it.
So welcome, Joel and Lisa Marie. And yeah.
Welcome to the family.
Yeah.
I have some listener mail. Ooh. Chad Newman sent a note to us saying, I listen to the presentation podcast when it comes out. I enjoy what each of you bring to the podcast and enjoy the ideas that I can implement in my own presentations. Our lives are complete. Nice. Well, I'm serious. That's our goal. We want, you know, we try to describe in words such a visual medium, and we're really grateful that you let us know that it works for you, Chad. Thank you.
Okay, presentation people, you ready for this? 3M. Yes, the big corporate 3M is the inspiration for our conversation today. The company has released their VAS, V-A-S, Victor Alpha Sam software, which stands for Visual Attention Software. Just to preface this, it's not designed for presentation layouts, but it is, well, it is the direction the design industry, specifically web app and product packaging design, is going and embracing. Presentation design, well, it uses many of the same principles, and it can use this software to make presentation slides better. In February, Nolan, Sandy, and myself, we attended a webinar that 3M put on. It was a deep dive into the VAS software, and today we're discussing it and the ideas of VAS being applied to presentation design. And further, we are joined by Sean from 3M, who gave that lecture or webinar for AIGA and is going to give us some more details about it. So we're very excited about this. Here we go.
Hi, Sean.
Hi, Sandy. Hi, Troy. Hi, Nolan.
Welcome.
I'm excited.
Well, listen, I wanted to start this off by saying the concept of visual attention or eye tracking has been around for a long time. When Troy told Nolan and me about this webinar, we were excited to take a look at how far the concept of visual attention has come along. And hoping, or at least I was, that 3M's new VAS tool might have an application for us for presentation design. We are excited to welcome Sean Springer to the podcast today. Sean is an advanced application engineer at 3M, whose role puts him in charge of 3M Visual Attention Software, a vision prediction AI. Sean, tell us about yourself, and I'd love to hear about how you got to where you are today at 3M.
Awesome. Well, so to start with, one little correction. I'm not in charge of the entire software. However, in many ways, my role is kind of the outward-facing part of the software. So if you email us at hellovaz@mmm.com with any issues or suggestions, I'll be the one who takes that. You know, I do a lot of consumer insights, user experience research. I work with the development team to implement features, as well as, you know, presenting at webinars, talking to people like you. You know, it's been really exciting. So I've been in this role for about 4 or 5 months now. Prior to that, when I joined 3M, I was a product engineer. So doing kind of more day-to-day support for some of our crafting and creativity products. So if you use Scotch scissors or glue sticks or some of our other Scotch crafting supplies, you know, those are things I might have had some touches on too.
So why did you make the change? What brought you here?
You know, digital is really interesting to me. And I mean, probably to everyone. But when I heard that Vaz was coming into our division, so Vaz has been kicking around in 3M for a little while now, and I can talk about that a little later, perhaps. But with this push, with it coming into our division, I asked if I could be on this software. This is kind of a new space, not only for 3M, but especially for stationery and office supplies division. So it was a really exciting opportunity to kind of define how digital products will look for our consumer business group.
Stationery and office supplies.
Yep. That is, yeah, we are the stationery and office supplies division. And okay. Office supplies in 2021 is increasingly becoming software.
Well, yeah, I mean, because 3M, we don't have to, I guess, go into this, but that's a massive company, right?
It is.
I mean, so much more than Post-it Notes. I was going to ask you later on just about how this fit into the company at large, but I guess I can ask you now, like how,
sure.
What's in it for 3M, or what is the impetus for,
yeah.
For doing this kind of thing? Is it just kind of an internal thing, or is it really more outward facing for other clients?
So the story of Vaz actually goes back to the 1940s, which is what? Maybe a little... Yeah. So starting in the 1940s, 3M began manufacturing retroreflective materials for road signage, for safety vests, for signs, to keep workers safe on the roads. And for 60 years or so, the focus was always on just making these things brighter and brighter. You know, how do you increase the brightness, thinking that there was a direct correlation between brightness and visibility. Eventually, at some point, neuroscientists, vision scientists, cognitive scientists deep within the corporate research labs at 3M started realizing there's not actually a one-to-one ratio between brightness and, I never pronounce this word right, conspicuity.
Never heard of
that word. How conspicuous something is.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yep. And, you know, if it's not just the brightness, then what is it? What makes things more obvious? And to understand this, you know, experts, not me, experts at 3M, delved into the science of human vision, trying to understand the fundamental elements that happen in our precognitive visual processes. So this is really deep, like in your visual cortex. You know, I joke that this is part of the monkey brain or the lizard brain. You know, this isn't your higher functioning. This is the immediate, what do you see? What do you immediately grasp? And from there, Vaz was born. So Vaz has existed in some form within 3M for about the last 10 years, actually. So the original software was created around 2010. But we've recently re-released it. You know, we've increased our stability. We've made it work faster, and we've tailored the algorithm to make it more accurate than ever, to be able to present this kind of externally facing product to, you know, designers.
Wow. So for decades, it really was just an internal tool. Is it now still an internal tool? Like, are there rules like every package design has to get run through this and has to get approved? And, you know, is it integrated in that way?
We don't, I wouldn't say it's a rule so much, but it is important to us to eat our own dog food per se. You know, there is a big push for making sure that we're using Vaz internally as well. So for every external webinar or external demo that I do, I probably do two internal webinars or demos, getting the different 3M teams trained in on Vaz as well.
And this be a good transition, because the webinar that we sat in on, the demo, or one of the demos you did, was a package, I think a package of 3M scissors. Mm-hmm. And
well, hey, Nolan, hold on one second. So everybody joining us is literally on the same page here.
Yeah,
with the assumption that most people have not heard of something like 3M's Vaz analysis system and had the benefit of attending a workshop with you, Sean. Could you just... Do you have like a 90-second explanation of what Vaz is and how people use it?
Sure. Yeah. Let's do that. I realize I jumped ahead on our script here a bit, so I apologize for that. So Vaz is software. It's a web-based software tool, as well as having plugins for Adobe Illustrator, Adobe XD, and coming... Oh, sorry. Adobe Photoshop, Adobe XD, and coming very soon, Adobe Illustrator. So Vaz is a vision prediction AI. So you run a static image through it, and it will report out which areas are most likely to attract attention and be viewed consciously by the viewer within the first, 3 to 5 seconds, within that first precognitive vision phase. The reports that you get out, there are 5 different reports. There's a heat map, hotspots, the gaze sequence, so how your eyes actually travel through the image as it's initially viewed. And then finally, our advanced features. You can mark up particular areas of your image that you're really curious about to see what pops, based on your visual hierarchy, your identified design goals. The last feature comes back to 5 fundamental elements of human vision, which won't fit in this 90-second preview. But that information, that more detailed information, can be really useful to designers who want to know how to tweak their designs in order to change elements and match their visual hierarchy goals.
So now I need you to be very, very visual thinking. Can you describe for those people listening the steps that someone would take to go through this? Well, first of all, I think there's the web version, the online web browser version, and then, of course, the add-in for the Adobe products, as you mentioned.
We'll just stick with the web version. I ended up doing all my analysis so far just by doing, because the web version is super clean and easy. Mm-hmm. The plugin I actually didn't get around to figuring out, to be honest, for Photoshop, I should say.
Yeah. So tell our listeners how you go about this.
Sure. So go to vaz.3m.com, click the sign up for free to put your email in and create a free trial account. That'll give you 1 month and 10 credits for analysis. From there, you can upload any image, JPEG, PNG, or PDF format. We recommend that it be at least 600 by 600 pixels. If it's smaller, it'll still work. But that resolution, that minimum resolution, helps make sure that it's as accurate as possible. From there, click the Analyze button, and within 7 seconds, you'll have your reports. And you can kind of pop through those. There's a little question mark tooltip that'll pop up that will answer some common questions. Otherwise, as always, feel free to email me if you have questions or need help.
And by markup, you mean you literally select the items that you want the analysis to be conducted on.
So you can either skip that part if you just want the basic readouts. So if you just want a quick heat map, hotspots, and gaze sequence, those are kind of what we call the automated reports or the basic reports. Those will be run every single time you analyze an image, no matter what you choose. But if you do want to choose specific areas of your image, you can identify those, and then the software will look more carefully at those points. And it'll give you more detailed feedback about the conspicuity, about the visibility of those specific areas, along with, our visual features report, which tells you why those areas are more visible.
So I actually didn't know you could skip the highlighting, but you definitely get more information. And I think that's an important part of this. You make the decision of what items you want analyzed, right? So there's a maximum of 10, right?
This point,
right?
Yep.
So you just drag out a rectangle selection around multiple items. And Sean, one of my questions was, they have to be just rectangles, and you can't angle those rectangles, and you can't lasso items.
So there is no lassoing. However, you can do polygon selections. You can kind of go like click, 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 click. I guess if you're really patient, you could lasso something and do a circle.
I thought I stumbled into that, but I couldn't make it work. So
instead of clicking and dragging, if you just go click, 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 you can do any shape polygon. Now, I do want to note that's in the web app only. In the plugins, we use the rectangle tool and convert those to targets. So in the plugins, it is rectangle only, but we do have freeform selection in the web app.
Because I had a poster that one of my big examples I use my trainees all the time that has a big diagonal diagonal text, and I was like, how do I select this? I can't. So I just did a massive rectangle around it, which maybe wasn't the best.
Well, you'll have to try it again. Reanalyze it with that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I have a question on this, because we're talking about this. You create targets, or you get to select them. Mm-hmm. What is the difference? Because there's two types of targets. There's what I'll call content, and then there's faces. As far as I can tell, those are the two types of targets. What's the difference between face and content?
Sure. So I think what you're talking about is the content are just like selecting the areas of interest, and those are what we'll give you. Yep. And so when you run it in, it will like kind of use that same kind of green checkered box to identify faces. And that's just kind of the software telling you that it thinks it sees a face here. So, you know, it's pretty good at identifying faces, but sometimes it might mistake something for a face. So if it sees that green checkered box and it's not a face, you can delete it. Or if you do have a face in your image that you want to make sure the software is recognizing as a face, you can like add it as a face. And if you want to select the faces as an area of interest, you'll have to drag another like rectangle over it. Does that make any sense? So they're kind of two separate things. One is the areas of interest for the more detailed feedback, and the other is faces.
Got it. Yep. And I'm looking at we'll get into this in a moment, but one of my examples was an award slide. And obviously the winner's face was a key element. And the first time I did it, it didn't register at all. The second time I did it, I very purposely did the marker over it, the target, instead of the automated one. And suddenly it became the number one, which it should be. It took up, you know, 2/3 of the visible space. But on the first one, it totally ignored it because I think I was having a hard time figuring out the difference. I did a manual one. Okay.
So can you talk about this all in practical applications of this for 3M and for designers and anyone using it? It's an interesting psychological tool, or does it really have real world consumer applications? And have there been studies that you've accessed that might prove the benefit of the tool like this?
Yeah. So I'll start from the top. You know, we definitely think it has practical applications. Of course, you know, I'm going to say that, but, we've heard from designers that it can be really useful in, I would say, two major ways. The first is for iterating on your designs. Compared to like a standard, you know, eye tracking study, this is a lot faster, it's a lot cheaper, and you can use it earlier on in the process. So you can rapidly iterate, rapidly compare designs. You can tweak and perfect to make sure your visual hierarchy is correct and where you want it to be. The other area we've seen this used for quite a lot is actually to end subjective debates. You know, I'm not a designer, but a lot of designers have really resonated with this, where you're sitting with a client and they're like, can you just make that pop more? Or, you know, what? I don't know what. Right. I'm not a designer.
I don't like it.
Yeah. But as a tool for designers to actually present their work, to sell their work, to prove with data to their clients that they are accomplishing the goals of their client. And we see this across all sorts of design, whether that be web, whether that be packaging or creating entire shelf sets. You know, if you want your product to distinguish itself from the competitors on the shelf, it can be really helpful to understand what colors are in that space. And that's something where VAS can really help to make sure that what you want to pop is actually popping against, you know, the background noise of everything else.
So that's a really interesting one. Now that you've brought it up, I'm just going to interrupt and say, so do you have people like going into like a retail spot and taking a picture of their products against the wall and then bringing it back to, you know, their office and running that?
Yes. Yep. And actually that's a lot of what we've used VAS for internally, within 3M, is making sure our shelf sets are optimized to be the way that we want them to. And, you know, we do have a couple studies. I'm going to take that last part of Sandy's question there, too. So one case study I like is about a 3M Russia website where the call to action button wasn't quite as visible as they wanted it to be. So they ran it through VAS. They saw that a face on the website was actually drawing a lot of attention, and it was kind of on the other side of the page. So what they did was change the color of the buy now button and position it closer to the face. And running it through VAS, it actually increased the visibility of that button from about 71% to about 86%. So about a 15% increase in visibility in VAS. And even that 15% increase in visibility ended up driving 181% more clicks. You know, that change got almost double the, you know, click-through rate to that button. So, you know, we don't have quite as many case studies as we'd like. We're actually just starting a trial program that I think Sandy is a part of. And so we're hoping to work with more designers to get more case studies to kind of show, you know, with data, with real experiences, what VAS can do. But, you know, we do see it as a powerful tool.
I mean, I can easily see people adding this to A/B studies, as a backup, like you said. I mean, as an additional check, I also like being able to push back on clients. Like, it's the science. I got, you know, I did what I could. one of the best tips I ever got as a speaker, somebody once told me, said, if you add the words "studies show" before anything you say, it instantly ups your credibility, whether there's a study or not. You know, studies show. So VAS software shows.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's do this. Let's talk a bit. So let's step back, Nolan, Sandy, myself. Let's step back and talk about our experience testing VAS. I know we've all gotten a VAS account. I know we've all been uploading various things, and I think they probably haven't been the target items that Sean's team's been looking at. As a disclaimer, the AIGA trial was my route to VAS, and it began with access just March 1st. So I think you guys got a little more of an extended trial, but so I've only had this to look at for like a few, well, when this releases, just over a week. So I haven't done hundreds of these. I've done under a dozen, and I've been really impressed and surprised by some of the results, I guess I'd say. Mm-hmm. I personally have found the web-based interface my go-to over the Photoshop plugin. How about you, Nolan, Sandy? I think you already said so, but
yeah, I thought it was much easier.
And I also, we should point out when you first start to analyze something, you have an option of, Sean, I think it's 9 different categories or 9. It asks you what kind of material it is. And, so like print, I don't have it in front of me right now, but what is it like print, website, email,
out of home billboards, the product case set, which I thought was a very interesting one. I ended up using website for a lot of them, thinking that our content presentation probably most mimic that, or billboard in the fact that it's viewed from a distance and it should be larger content, not small print.
I didn't play around too much with different ones. I usually went to the other as a category, right? Because I just assume I never fit into a category.
I did that based on Sean's recommendation because I just thought that I'd keep it easy.
Sean, do you find a major difference in the results of those different categories?
So each of those different categories is a tweak on the same algorithm, basically. I actually think under the hood, there's 7 different categories, not 9 different algorithms. So a few of those doors lead to the same place. And the reason for that is it doesn't so much matter what it is, but that's how people like to think about it. So, you know, they click the one that's most appropriate. It more matters the context in which you're viewing it. So if you're seeing something that's taking up, you know, pretty much your entire laptop screen, no matter what that is, whether that's a presentation that's being broadcast or a web page, it's going to resonate on your visual system the same way. Similarly, things that are outdoor are going to be pretty different. So one big example is something called the center fixation bias. When people look at something on a screen, you tend to look more closely at the things that are in the middle. And things that are in the middle of the screen will capture your attention more than things around the edges. This center fixation bias doesn't exist when you're outdoor or in the real world. So that's just kind of one example of what the algorithm tweaks to be as accurate as possible between the different types of content.
I was taking the color space, because I know you guys account for a lot of color space, as a big difference between anything indoor and the outdoor, like the billboard one. I figured, oh, this is going to have a totally different algorithm for the red-green balancing because, you know, you have daylight or nighttime lighting and everything else. Okay, very interesting. So Nolan, Sandy, describe one of the uploads you guys did, and I'll describe one of mine. And surprises or things that were, what'd you experience?
Well, I tried several, but the one I'm talking about right now is a very basic slide. I have a headline, a subhead. There's some text underneath, probably smaller than I normally would in a presentation, and then a large graphic on the right. So headlines on the left, large graphic on the right. When I checked the gaze sequence, that was my biggest surprise because in my mind, I thought the headline and the image would be seen together or back and forth somehow, that it would focus on just those two. What I didn't understand it, but it makes perfect sense, is that in the gaze sequence, the eye landed on that graphic, that image, which is a rocket ship coming out of an illustration of a rocket ship coming out of a computer and clouds and poofs and all this. And the glanceability sequence was 1, 2, 3 within a single image. And then finally 4 went over to the headline. So I don't know if that's bad or good. I was surprised. Tell me about it. What do you think about the results of that, Sean? Is that expected or not?
You know, you shared this one with me, so mm-hmm. I can say that it's somewhat expected. You know, I'm not too surprised. You know, talking about the elements that attract the eye, you know, edges and color contrast are really strong. And so images oftentimes have much stronger edges brighter colors, more color contrast than text, especially, you know, text on a background doesn't draw the eye quite the same way that an image will oftentimes.
Remind me, in glanceability, is it the four steps are the 3 to 5 seconds, or is each step 3 to 5 seconds?
So it's kind of the top four things that your audience will see within that first 3 to 5 seconds.
So that's okay. Not that bad, really. I mean, maybe I would have liked them to go to the headline first, but I'm not. Okay, so...
And, you know, the final thing I'll say is that VAS only models that pre-conscious, that pre-attentive phase. So, you know, we're used to reading things on a slide. We will eventually read things on a slide. And by the time that you're reading, you're really engaging kind of your conscious brain. That's not where VAS is working anymore. Mm-hmm. So, you know, actually ending, making sure that your image is seen first and then ending the gaze sequence on the text, which is where your audience will start that conscious phase, that reading phase, that's not necessarily a fail case either. That could be the intended flow.
Fascinating. How about you, Nolan?
So I ran it through a bunch of different things. One of them was a coupon ad for, this is very glamorous. We designed a coupon ad for a foot cream, which you'll see in the drugstore. And one of my print designers did it. And he did this a few weeks ago, and he didn't know I was doing this. I ran it through, and I sent it to him, and the results were basically, there's a big old coupon, like a big circular coupon, and then the product image, and then the logo and the name of it, and there were some other photos and lots of other text down below. But basically, it landed right on the coupon first, then went to the product image, then went to the logo, then went to what the name of the product was next to the logo, and I sent it to him. And he's like, wow, this is very interesting. I didn't know about this. Basically confirms what I've been doing for 30 years. Any designer will tell you this, like it's ingrained. Now, is it so conscious? Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not, and this was not a terribly complicated layout, but it was certainly nice to see that demonstrated.
What he could do, let's say he was pitching that, or you were pitching that for the first time to a client. Not only is it great design and you know what to look at it, but now you can say, and I ran a gaze sequence on this, or I ran a VAS on this, and it passed with flying colors, or whatever the results were. Yeah. So it brings that subjectivity into a more objective realm.
Okay. So here's mine. I out of the ones I did, I'm going to talk about a title slide. So a traditional title slide, it's got a very, you know, it's an all branded color background. It's got some big, large text. It's got the segment name on it. And then it's got some other fine tuning text. I figured, oh, this should be interesting. I believe I used Billboard for this one as the preset algorithms. I don't know if that made a factor or not. It's also all mainly dark blues and dark greens with white text popping against it. There's a lot of contrast. So I ran this through. So I exported it as an image. I uploaded it into the VAS webpage and it said analyze. I selected my hot spots or targets. That's what I call them, right, Sean? I call them targets. So I selected my targets, which was the big bold text. Next to that text, there's actually a rendering of this medical topic. And then I targeted also the talk title or the segment title. And then there's another small line is basically the acknowledgement of who's underwriting this particular study. And I had a goal with this one. And that was that we went back and forth on the design. And it was that little extra line of text, like saying, you know, we'd like to thank you, or accreditation is provided by, you know, it's almost a legal disclaimer. It's an information piece. But I was like, you know, should we really have this all the way up next to the big title? We ultimately went there because that's what the client wanted, but I was actually voting to put it down low. I was like, you know, let's put it away from the main content. It'll actually get more attention and make it more legal feeling, more respectable. We didn't. So here's the deal. I put it into VAS. Figured this is easy. It's basically three zones and one zone has two elements, a big title and an image. So I gave each one a target, and the area of interest, that's the one that tells us the percentage, right? Let me open this up really quick. It was exactly as expected. The title itself, 67% instant, area of interest, then the image next to it, because they're aligned. The title, big white text below it, got 48%. And the little independent activity, blah, 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 text line, it actually got 34%. I was kind of thinking more like 12. You know, I'm thinking this is a stupid place for this. So it actually gave more credit to one area than I thought, but it did actually align with, again, Nolan, just like you're saying, it's like, oh, it, at least I feel, what's the word to say here? You know, at least I feel good that this software is literally replicating the results I would expect, or what I've, you know, my background in design is telling me. The one that did get me, and I think this is where you're at, Sandy, the visual sequence, like the 1, 2, 3, 4, it only does 4, right? It only identifies no matter how many. It identifies 4. Okay. So it identifies where you're going to see things first, second, and third. This was really interesting. It did the middle of the headline first. Then it went straight across to the image. Then it went back to the first word of the headline. And then it went down to the talk title. I was like, well, that's interesting, because I don't know if I actually see the middle words first or not, but I could see it doing that. The important thing was it did not register that one line that I thought was irrelevantly placed. So again, I feel justified that my design actually matches with some algorithms. On the other hand, some of the things were a little bit of a surprise. Nolan, can you tell us about your poster? Because I have a tandem to your poster. Are you going to talk about that?
I will. And Shauna should have sent this to you before, but I'll send it after. So for years and years, my introduction to when I train people on data visualization is to show them a poster of Casablanca. And there are a lot of different versions, but this is one of the original ones. And it, to me, it's the perfect example of eye gaze and also a whole bunch of different graphic design principles. But I start off by putting it up and I ask people, just stare at it for a few seconds. And then I start asking them, what did you look at first? Usually it's the big title Casablanca, which is a red over a yellow background. And then what'd you see next? Then it's Bogart and Bergman. Their faces are big and centered. And then we literally go around, what did you see next? What did you see next? And then we talk about emphasis and de-emphasis and color and black and white and size and placement. And so we get kind of this basic, you know, most of the time, 90% of the time, people take the same exact route. So I was really fascinated to upload that. And I was surprised by some of the results. Again, I was interested, like Troy, in the eye gaze steps. And there are only 4. I wish there were more. But yeah, it was interesting to see where the software thought people's eye would go. And a couple times I just thought, that's interesting why it's popping there and then coming to here. And again, it's a poster that you absorb in just a couple of seconds completely, but still, you know, that order was, I think for presentation people is, and data visualization as well, I think it's really important.
And Nolan, on yours, you had the big picture of Bogart and
Bergman.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Did that rank in the eye gaze?
It did. I'm redoing it now because I want to try some other things. Yeah.
Awesome.
But I think, where is my eye gaze? Yeah. Well, actually in one of them, and this might be because I turn, does it include faces if in the eye gaze? It does. So in one of them, it actually skipped over the faces and it went and just went to text. In another time I ran it through, it went to the faces first. So it's interesting.
Did you mark it in either of those cases, Nolan?
Did I mark
up
the targets?
Oh, yeah, I did. Yeah, in all cases, I marked up the targets.
Mm-hmm. So the target regions, which regions you choose, shouldn't affect the heat map, hotspots, or gaze sequence. So the software for those 3 reports, actually, the software analyzes the entire image, everything. You know, no matter what you choose, it just, when you mark those areas up, it provides more detailed feedback on those specific areas, if that makes sense.
It makes you think of your objectives too. It makes you think, okay, now if I'm designing the slide, I want people to read my headline. That's important. And I want them to see this image. And if I don't rank well within those, that's a learning in itself.
So just on the Casablanca poster, and it started with the word Casablanca, which one would assume is the most important of this thing. Then it skipped over the 2 faces, went to Bergman's name at the top, and then went to Warner Brothers, and then went to Humphrey Bogart. So Humphrey Bogart was 4th on this list, which his agent probably would have appreciated. But so it's that actually surprised me that it went to Bergman which is right next to the words. But I'll send it to you after.
So here was the reason I went to this, because Nolan, when you said it skipped over the images, like, well, that's interesting. So I pulled up an awards deck because we're doing award shows all the time. And we have one because a lot of our award shows now are virtual. So you don't get the ability to have, you know, the person standing up and cheering, you know, them getting on camera. So we're doing a lot of photos on awards decks. We don't normally do this because the person's there in person. You don't need it. So I pulled up one, and the first time I ran it through, this is the one that where I used just the auto face target, and then I identified the other areas. And when I ran it through the analysis, it showed up on the heat map. The face area showed up on the heat map, but in the image sequence, it totally skipped the face. I was like, how could it do that? It's like 2/3 of this whole image is a person's head. And then I felt really bad because it was my head. I put me in there because I didn't want to show the actual, you know, somebody, you know, an actual client. So I re-ran it again, but then I did a target where I manually did the target, and it showed up that time as, again, on the heat map, but in the visual sequence, it became number one. So it was a big change. But ironically, it took the award winner's name, which is the largest text on the whole thing. And it's also the only white text, so it has the most contrast. It took it off of the gaze sequence, but it kept it on the heat map. But on the percentage thing, which I know is probably what most people are looking at, is the, what's that called? Area of interest. I'm sure that's the most data point driven thing for conversations and adjusting design. It showed up there, but it didn't show up on the gaze sequence. Anyways, I had like a conflicting results on this one. I was like, I don't know if I agree with this, but it was still fascinating to see and do. And again, I'm using, you know, an award slide is not within the algorithms. It's kind of unique. I don't know how it's thinking about it, but it didn't quite match up, but it's interesting. Okay, moving on.
Just one quick comment. You know, that's something that we hear a lot, is that the results aren't quite what I expected. And I think one of the reasons for that is that difference between precognitive and cognitive vision. You know, Vaz is analyzing that early stage of vision where you're not really understanding what you're seeing yet. It's more your eyes kind of like flitting around the image, taking everything in, and then your brain in the background stitching it all together into something coherent. So it makes sense to me that sometimes it'll grab the middle of a sentence. You know, it doesn't matter in this precognitive phase whether your sentence is written left to right or right to left. Everything is going to show up just in terms of edges, in terms of color contrast, in terms of faces, in terms of those elements of vision that are kind of biologically hardwired into you. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think Vaz is a good tool for designers. It helps with those things that aren't easily able to be understood or logically understood. You know, you can't consciously understand something that happens before you're even thinking about it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so a lot of designers or people in the presentation world have kind of adopted a lot of traditional graphic design principles, and they've adopted or they've looked at a lot of science behind it. I see an analysis tool, or I should just say, I see analysis tools like 3M's Vaz software as something that's going to be a big component in the future of presentation design. So, quite honest question here. For you, Sean, be honest. Has anyone working on this project ever said, hey, presentation slides, we should analyze those?
Not until Sandy asked a very good question during the AIJ webinar a couple of weeks ago. Now, and that's maybe a little joking. You know, presentation design was not one of our absolute or our dedicated target markets. You know, that said, even before that webinar, I had run our Vaz slides all the way through Vaz just to make sure that our key takeaways, that our content that I wanted shown were going to be shown. It's also something that I see the tool being really good for. In terms of the human visual system, there's not really a difference between the presentation and, you know, a web page. So the tool will work. It will be applicable for it. And, you know, like the rest of design, needing to make sure that what you want the viewer to see is what's actually being seen, that your image that you put there isn't distracting too much from other key areas. I see a lot of value there. And finally, talking just to Sean, this is not representing Vaz or the Vaz team. I would love to see, you know, there's already a lot of artificial intelligence in PowerPoint. And I'm sure you guys know that better than I do, but with design suggestions, with other things that's going on, Microsoft is building more and more AI into all of their tools. I would love to, if you popped open that design suggestions and had even a super stripped down version of Vaz, maybe even just like a heat map that would pop up and show you what what was going on in that slide built in. I would love that. Now, again, this is talking as Sean, not as anything else. So I want to be very clear about that. But that's an idea that's gotten in my head after having these conversations, you know, after listening. I think I'm 7 episodes deep into your podcast now.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's been a lot of fun while out walking the dog. But I love the idea, and I would love to see more integrations with Vaz into PowerPoint or into the presentation space.
Cool. I've got one last question for you before we into a wrap up here. But Sean, you said walking your dog. You have a puppy, right?
I do. Yes. Yep.
And you live in Minnesota, right?
I do. Yep.
And you're walking outside in whatever the weather is in Minnesota in February?
Yes. Yep. I at one point when it was about like negative 20, I was putting 3 pairs of pants on, and my puppy is a border collie poodle mix. So she's got a thick coat. She has no issues with the snow as long as she's got her boots on. But
wow. Okay. I'm from San Diego. I just do not identify, but that was, I was trying to put 2 and 2 together there. Okay. Here's the last question for you. You know, as a presentation podcast, we're kind of known for our conversations and not really interviews or product pitches, but we're adjusting our format on this one just a bit because, well, I want to provide everybody listening some more information about the Vaz website, which you've kind of alluded to, but I believe there's a free trial you mentioned. Could you just maybe give kind of a final detail, some pricing of what it does cost should you sign in? I know we identified that it's on plugins, our Photoshop and Illustrator, but is there any future of that? And give a hint to anyone listening that Microsoft applications and plugins may occur. I don't know. Give us a summary. Give us your pitch. Vaz pitch.
Sure. So vas.3m.com, nice and easy website to remember. There's a free trial. So when you sign up, you'll get 1 month for free plus 10 image credits. Once you've used all of those, you'll have to subscribe. So there's multiple different ways to subscribe. You can either get the full access, or you can get web app only, or you can get plugins only. I believe the full access is about $600 annually, or about $50 a month, where down to buying an individual plugin is $10 a month. So much, much cheaper if you're only interested in using a specific plugin. If you have any questions, I'll give you my work email again, which is hellovaz@mmm.com. And I would be happy to support. Or if you're just using it and want specific features, or if you want another plugin for, we often hear, Figma or things like that, sending those into that email and getting it on my desk that way, we love feedback. So, I'm happy to help however I can.
That is awesome. I'm sure that Figma being a total web-based thing is an easier, hurdle than a standalone desktop app. So I've gotten a lot of introductions to Figma in the past, I would say, 4 or 5 months. Hey, let me do a quick wrap up here, and then we're going to come back with some pro and tech tips and obviously final goodbyes. Okay, to wrap up our conversation, the concept of visual tracking software is evolving, and I'm very excited about it. Presentations are not getting any attention yet, at least attention that says this is algorithms based on presentation slide design and best practices there. But I can see the fit, and I can see the adoption of the right software that combines like the principles of the 3AM VAS software with an understanding of what presentation slides are to accomplish for a presenter and the audience viewing them. Hey, thank you, Sean, for lending some of your time to the presentation podcast. It was fantastic to have you join us and talk about the exciting new things in visual communication field. We are going to have some fun with pro and tech tips before we say goodbye. Okay, let's do the pro and tech tips. We're going to have Sean join us with his. Nolan, why don't you kick it off?
Gradient Generator. This is a really cool online tool from Eric Kennedy, who's a sort of a UX sort of master, and he's got some great courses. I get his weekly emails. And so we'll put the UI in there. I mean, if you type Eric Kennedy gradient generator. Maybe you'll get to it. It's not the easiest URL, but it's at learnui. I'm not even going to give it. we'll just look at the show notes. But this is, okay, it is a gradient generator. So why do you need that if in almost any program you can just put in your colors and let the program do the magic for you? Well, as he points out, generally when that happens, and it definitely happens in PowerPoint, you're selecting two, let's just assume two colors. So you put one on the left, put one on the right, and then the program does the math to sort of get from one part of the color wheel to the other part. And the problem with this is as he visually shows in this is that so often you go through this ugly gray zone mm-hmm. as the two colors try to meld. And he shows that if you don't take a straight line to the other color, but you take a curved line, basically going around the color wheel, you're going to get a far more appealing gradient. And you're obviously going to be bringing in, you know, other color values in between. So there's a little subjectivity there, but I got to say, like, using this, because it does it on, you just put in your colors and then it gives you the values in between that you should plop in yourself.
So you manually have to take the values and put them in PowerPoint then is what we end up doing. Yeah.
And okay. Sometimes there are a few of them, but you know, he gives the CS code as well. So you could, you know, if you're on the web, you could drop
hex
it
value.
In hex value. Yeah. So it's just fascinating because, I mean, just go to the site, put it in, and you're going to see these gradients are far more attractive than what you're generally creating yourself. So it's called Gradient Generator, completely free. It's fantastic. So definitely make use of that.
Okay. So here's mine. I'm just going rogue. It's just something that's necessary in these times. And I used to have a long time ago, a USB based one of these, and it just wasn't powerful enough. So I finally went for it. So here's what I'm talking about. I'm sitting at my desk literally all day long. And I'm drinking hot tea in the morning, coffee in the afternoon. And I finally broke down, went on Amazon. I was like, I'm getting tired of cold tea. You know, iced tea is good. Room temperature tea, not so much. So I finally went on, read through all the reviews, and I got a coffee mug warmer. You know, it's a little round disc and it warms up. So I bought one called Demux. I'll put a link in there. There's hundreds of them out there. It's like $30 and I got to plug in the wall one. So it's got a little more power to it. It only heats up when there's something put on top of it though. So it's kind of unique in that it has to be something weighted. Not induction, like it doesn't have to be metal, but anyways, so it's just made my morning so much nicer to be able to keep my tea at a nice tea level. So it's a little thing. It's a techie thing. And I literally looked through, I probably wasted way too much time looking for the right ones. And I'm still not sure this is the best one, but I really like it. It's a little bit taller than I was hoping for. But hey, that's my latest tech purchase. And it only cost me $30 to say this is much better for my days.
Nice.
Great.
You know, this one may be a little obvious, but it's the app that I use most or love the most, which is on desktop. It's called Flux, F.LUX. And on my Android, it's called Twilight. And what both of them do is based on the time of day and your location, they will alter your screen to be a little warmer, to be a little yellower, oranger at night. And I found that it helps me sleep a lot better. It really reduces eye strain. Now, conversely, it's really important to turn them off at times too. If you're working with things that require sensitive colors, they'll turn your green, they'll turn your blues a little green. I bought a shirt. Green's my favorite color. I thought it was going to be a nice green shirt. When it turned out here, it turns out it was pretty blue and it was just my Flux that had tricked my eyes into thinking that it was a different color than it actually was. Now, that said, I absolutely love these apps and have found that they've really increased my quality of life, especially when you're using your computer late at night, as, you know, we maybe shouldn't be doing, but often do.
So this is interesting because Sean mentioned the Flux app and talking about altering your screen temp and color for your eyes. My recommendation is based on the same thing. I recommend that if you wear glasses, Troy, you wear glasses. Nolan, I'm pretty sure you wear glasses. I think I've seen pictures of you.
Sometimes I do.
Sometimes are you a contact person or
no?
Do you just...
I have a very, very weak prescription, and occasionally I'll wear them driving or just for fashion. But I had a LASIK years ago.
There's that fashion statement with Nolan again.
You still might want to think about this, though. A while ago, Rick Bretschneider suggested, we were talking about eyes and strain and computer screens and all that, and he suggested that I get prescription lenses for the computer. Mm-hmm. So I consulted with my eye doctor, I can't remember, ophthalmologist, and lo and behold, I was able to get not only my regular everyday glasses, but a special prescription that is for this mid-range vision, and it also has the blue tints in it, mm-hmm. so that yep. It downplays the blues in the screen. And I'll have to tell you, when I put these glasses on, when I'm working at the computer, there's immediate relief on my eyes. The strain goes away. I've had them for a year, and I don't think I would work without them. So my tip is prescription lenses for computer work.
Excellent.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a professional presentation design agency. Check us out at tlccreative.com. We have a blog, we're on Facebook, and we're obviously here on the podcast.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com, and our website, our business website, nolanhamescreative.com, where you can get lots of information, downloads, and blah, blah, blah.
And
you know the Sandy. Drill. I'm moving on. Sandy, you take us
actually,
home.
Actually, I'm going to go with his right now.
All right. This is Sean Springer from 3M. You can find me on Facebook as Sean Springer, on LinkedIn as Sean Springer. And feel free to email me about anything Vaz related at hellovaz@mmm.com.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwhiz.biz, the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org. And I'm also on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and on Twitter as @PPTWhiz.
Thank you for joining us for another great presentation conversation. Episode show notes are available at the Presentation Podcast website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. Also through the website, contact the show host with episode suggestions, questions, or comments. We want other designers to join us, and you can help. Please leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or Spotify. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc., and new episodes release on the first and third Tuesday of each month.